This is the Live Your Edge podcast, episode 46. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Live Your Edge podcast. My name is Gilbert Joa, your host. Today, we'll be speaking with Matt Johnson. Matt Johnson of Pursuing Results is a former WordPress developer who pivoted his business into a podcast production company, and he offers his production services as a full package standardized product. Today, we're going to be talking about how he used podcasting a couple years back to break into new markets and set himself up to be renowned in his. We'll be talking about things such as finding your eureka moment, finding the right people to work with you that can back you, and how to get ahead even if you don't have your own podcast. Join me in welcoming Matt Johnson. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Live Your Edge podcast. I'm here with Matt Johnson. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Gilbert, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So Matt is based out of San Diego, and his business is basically helping people break into new markets with his podcast system and using podcasting as a way to build strategic relationships and create authority with decision makers and other potential clients and so forth. So Matt, walk us through your journey. How do you come across podcasting in general, and what was your life like before that?
Yeah, well, so 5 years ago, I was just some dude working at an agency. I was account managing, and we had a lot of clients that agency kind of was the dominant player in a certain space in residential real estate, which I had a background in. And so I got the opportunity to start doing business development. And the way that we're going to do it is to start hosting webinars with the influencers and thought leaders in that space. So I got introduced to a lot of people, and I started doing live video webinars with these folks. And it started to go really well. And finally, one of them, after a few months, one of them came to me and just pitched me and said, "Hey, dude, we should start a podcast together." I'm like, "Well, it's funny you should say that, because I was thinking about pitching you on the idea of us starting a podcast together." So we're like, "Okay, let's do it." We had a vague idea that we're going to start this podcast, and he wanted to sell coaching, and I wanted to get into like the teaching training kind of aspect of it, and maybe tinker around with creating some training programs and stuff. And fast forward to today, that podcast has over 1 million downloads. It was recently named again, like one of the top podcasts in the space. It goes between like top 5, top 10, whatever, it depends on who's ranking. But it went really well. And people started to kind of ask like how I did that. I started to, at one point we were doing, you know, 3 episodes a week, and people were asking me how I was doing it. And I just explained like, "Look, I built a team behind me that does all the backend work. So I just show up and hit record and talk, and the team does the rest." And like, "Wow, that sounds amazing. Can I like rent them when they're not working for you?" So that's kind of how it started. I at every step, I took the opportunities that presented themselves where people felt like they were getting a lot of value out of it. And then that led to eventually turning it into an agency where we just do that one service for people so that they can get the same experience that I did. You just show up and hit record and we do the rest.
So what are the sort of components of that kind of system?
Like in terms of like producing a podcast, like what goes into it?
Yeah.
Okay. So the basics are, we're talking about all video podcasts for the most part. So they record on Zoom just like we're doing here. And so we do the audio production, video production, and then we're publishing on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the usual places, and then promoting it on email and social media. So I've got specialists. I basically built a team of specialists in every area. So it's like a production line for podcasting.
And you mentioned that your team is all remote and you're the only one that's based out of San Diego and everyone else is all over the world. How do you decide like who is qualified for which component of your business, and how do you manage your team?
Yeah. So in terms of who's qualified, it's actual auditions. So it's giving them something concrete to work on that's as close to either having them do real work for clients and then, having one of our other team members do it concurrently so we can match them up and see who's better, or giving them a live audition that's as close to the real work that they'd be doing as humanly possible. And that works really well with writing and stuff like that. So yeah, funny story, like 3 years ago or so, I was hiring my first writer because it was one of the last parts of the production process that I kept for myself because that's my skill set. And I wanted to find somebody, and I started looking. I put some ads up, and we had two final candidates. One was like a journalism major who lived in Missouri. The other was this random person in South Africa. So I gave them a live audition. I gave them the assignment. I gave them the same assignment. And the gal from South Africa blew it out of the water. It like nailed it right off the bat. I'm like, holy cow. She's still with me today. She's now our head writer and our special projects coordinator. And she's been based in Johannesburg this whole time. I've never met her in person, but we meet religiously every single week. And she hires our other writers. So we've got a couple of other writers in South Africa. And so, yeah, it's really interesting. Like I focused on just having an audition process that was as close to the real work as possible. And then you just unconditionally hire the person who does the best and then figure out the rest. And we figured out just regular meetings, regular communication, good planning, good reporting, fixes the communication stuff so that you can work with the best talent all around the world.
Wow. And I imagine that like working with different time zones is, can be quite challenging.
So we've got some folks in the Philippines that they modify their hours a little bit for us. South Africa is a little bit easier because they're the same general time frame as like Paris and the UK. And so it's like 9 a.m. for me is 5 p.m. for them. So it's still kind of within their workday. So we get it. We can fudge with that a little bit and we're not inconveniencing staff. And then our staff in the Philippines, for the most part, once they get through training, it's up to them whether they want to work US hours or not. And their stuff is production based. So as long as they're communicating and we keep in touch through like apps like Voxer, where you can voice message each other real quickly. Yeah. And so we speed up the rate of communication so that we don't have gaps where people can fall into where production can slip and we don't know about it. So we know pretty quickly. And because we've set that environment where we have really good systems, then people can plug in. Once they're out of training, they don't necessarily need to work the same hours as us. And there's not a lot of like communication that has to be done where they're getting stuff answered on the fly, just because we've built the systems to the point where we don't have to do that. So a lot less, the fewer fires that you're putting out all the time, the less you need that real-time communication.
So for someone that's just getting started in the podcasting space, mm-hmm. and hearing that, you shared all of your, the different workload that's related to producing a podcast. Mm-hmm. What do you feel that people really get stuck on? Like really like hung up on, that's holding them back from really one, if they haven't started one, to get started, if they've been thinking about starting one and they haven't started because maybe there's something involved in the process that's really time consuming. Which of these parts do you feel is more time consuming? Is it the writing? Is it the editing? Is it the marketing of it? Why do you feel people don't?
It's funny. Because I only figured this out because I ran a done for you service where we took all the tech and all the back end stuff off of people. Is what you find is it's not actually that stuff that slows people down, in my opinion, right? Like we're talking on Zoom and I'm talking to you on a $80 microphone on Amazon, right? Yeah. It's not that expensive. It's a little, you can do some research and you can definitely go down the rabbit hole on gear and how to submit a podcast to iTunes. But in reality, all you need is Zoom, an $80 microphone, and you publish something to SoundCloud and it syndicates over to iTunes and bam, you've got a podcast. I mean, we're talking about three steps. So it's actually really not that complicated. I think what holds most people back is actually the internal stuff, which is, am I good enough am I considered an expert? What right do I have to start a podcast or be a guest on a podcast? Because people don't feel like they're an expert until somebody else appoints them and chooses them and tells them, hey, you're an expert. And there's a part of your audience that is not yet entrepreneurs and they're looking to be. And you might look up to the entrepreneurs and think, you know, well, you run your own business. Like, there's no way you feel like an imposter. I guarantee you they all do. Mm. So one of my buddies launched a podcast with us a couple of years ago, and we're talking about someone that was a major, major big time CMO in Silicon Valley, whose last exit was a $5 billion exit from when his company got acquired. I found out 3 months after we launched his podcast that he just about called it off the night before it launched to iTunes. Because it was such a big moment, because it was the first thing that he put out there into the world that was just him. It was just his name. There's no company to hide behind. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't a launch of a product. Like, it was just him putting something into the world. That's what trips us up. All the other stuff you can figure out pretty quickly, or you can pay someone to help you with relatively easily. You know, it's that internal stuff of just feeling good enough to get out there and start talking and presenting yourself as an expert. I think that actually trips people up more.
Mm, so when it comes to, you know, feeling good enough to put yourself out there, how do you overcome that when you started off? Or did you have to overcome?
Yeah. Well, I did by being a podcast host and asking smart people first. So I started off by interviewing people, and I noticed a shift where people would start to ask for my opinions. I'm like, that's interesting. And then of course, having somebody pitch me on the idea of starting a podcast together where we were co-hosts, that helped. What really flipped the switch for me was realizing that I could share just three things and that everything would be okay. So I started to focus just on sharing what I knew, what I was learning, and what I was doing. And anybody can share those three things, even if you're still working a 9-to-5 and you have a side hustle, or you're a small business owner, or you're like an entrepreneur that your business isn't where you feel like it should be yet, which, by the way, all of us feel like that. There will never be a time when you don't feel like you're where you're supposed to be. But if you don't get out there and start presenting yourself as a thought leader, as an expert in your space, that's not going to help anything, right? Your business will, you can tinker in your business, or you can tinker in your career all you want. You're always going to feel like you could have been further along. You can't let that stop you from getting out there. And so if you focus on just sharing those three things, what you know, what you're learning, and what you're doing, then you can relax and you can say to yourself, hey, I might not be where I'm at, where I want to be, or where I feel like I could be. That's natural, but I can share where I'm at right now. And somebody else is behind me trying to follow in my footsteps, and I can at least help them get further along.
Yeah. So someone that you are one step in front of.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's, you know, like my background is in music, right? So like some of my favorite people to look up to are musicians. You'd be shocked when you meet the best musicians in the world. They're some of the most humble people. The reason why they're so humble, as opposed to some other mediocre musicians that are in big bands that are horribly, horrible, like they have a reputation for being terrible people. When you meet really, really unbelievably masterful musicians, they're super humble because they know how far they could go. They know how much they can learn. They know how much further they could go if they just practice a little bit more, right? So they're humble, and they kind of know where they fit into the pecking order. They might know that they're one of the best of all time, but they're still somebody that they look up to that they never feel like they're better than them, you know? And so I looked at them and I said, I can emulate that mentality. No matter how good I am, I'm always going to feel like there's further I can go. So stay humble, but don't hesitate to share what you know and what you're learning and what you're doing, because somebody else will benefit from it. But yeah, just know that no matter how good you are, you'll always feel like there's more to go. As long as you're a curious person that has some self-awareness, you're always going to feel like you have more growing to do.
So we talked about this before the call, and mm-hmm. Well, we talked about this before we started recording, which was, you don't necessarily need to launch a podcast to get started in podcasting. You could be a guest on a podcast. So why don't you share a bit more about how people can get involved with that, or what are some of the questions they can be asking themselves before they get into that?
Well, it's helpful to know, first of all, if you're not really plugged into the podcasting landscape, you might not know this, but there are over 700,000 podcasts on iTunes. I would say a pretty good chunk of them need guests, maybe half, maybe more, right? So, I mean, think about that for a second. Like, all of your business podcasts have guests on at some point, even the shows that are primarily about one person where they're just sharing their stuff. So the dirty secret is that podcast hosts are actually starving for good guests. They're looking for great people. They're looking for that next expert. So if you're not in that world and you don't know that, you might think, well, who am I to go pitch myself as a guest? Well, I'm here to tell you, like, we're looking for you. Like, I'm a podcast host. I produce a whole bunch of podcasts. I'm looking for a whole bunch of amazing guests. And I want to know who specifically, I want to know who is that next up and coming person that has amazing content. Because the guy that was big 5 years ago or 10 years ago is probably still coasting and saying the same things he was saying 5 years ago that everybody else has already heard. I want to have people on my podcast that have the next newest thing, that you're still in the trenches. You figured out something new and different and innovative, right? Whatever that might be. So you have to realize first that people are starving for that. And that goes right to the heart of the other part of your question, which is what kind of questions are you going to expect? The questions to expect are, you know, what do you do? Like, what are you an expert at? And how did you come to be an expert in that? Tell me the story of how you discovered this insight that now is creating these results, right? So whether you're working, a job as an executive, whether you're building your side hustle, whether you're an entrepreneur where you have ownership of everything, there's something that you're doing that's unique. So if you can dig into your own story and then you find that story arc of how you discovered that thing, that's what you go on podcast and share.
Do you have a formula for that story arc that you just mentioned?
Yeah, I would say, so you've got before, you've got after, and you've got the turning point, right? I would call it like every expert has a eureka moment where the light bulb goes off. That's the turning point. And the question is, what was your life before that? And what was your life like after that? So for example, like mine would be something like, you know, beforehand I was doing podcasts for myself and it was going well. But then my ex-CEO came to me and said, hey, I want you to run 4 different podcasts and help us break into 4 different industries. And it went so well that we introduced him to 100 of the top people in 4 different spaces over the course of like 3 months. And the CEO came to me and just said like, hey, like if you're like, I know you're consulting, you should think about just packaging this up and doing this. That was the turning point that made me say, you know, you're right. Like, this is the most effective thing I could be doing for thought leaders. And from that time on, that's what I focused on and my entire life changed, right? So I've got before, I've got the after, and then I zeroed it into the moment, the conversation when that light bulb turned on, you're like, you were right. I should do that. So that's my story. That's my story arc. That's what I recommend. Because no matter what, you might not have like a fast growth story. You might not have an I was hit by a car and almost died story. Like, there's people like that. That's fine. Every expert, no matter what you do, what your expertise is, you have a story of how you discovered how to do that thing that you do. So that's the story that you tell first.
So this is the story that you go on every podcast and you start off with this story.
Yeah.
Then you branch it off to a particular topic that calls you at that moment
for, exactly,
that episode.
Yeah, because everybody wants to know the story. That's always one of the most interesting parts to people. People want to be inspired. They want to be motivated. They want to know that there's people out there that are leading the way, doing interesting things. And then, yeah, from there, you branch it off and just kind of tailor the subject to whatever podcast that you're on.
Okay. So how do people find these podcasts to go on? You said there's 700,000 of them. How do you determine which one is... But do you determine which one to go to, or you just whatever one that decides to host you at that moment, you just jump on and then give it a try and start off and do it?
Well, starting is better than not. So yeah, if you need to, just start out with whatever opportunities come your way. Absolutely. If you want to get hyper specific and use podcast guest appearances to sell, you know, to promote your side hustle, promote your company, whatever the case is, here's what I would do. I would talk to your customers, ask them what they're listening to, look them up on iTunes. And if those shows are maybe a little bit too big, then scroll down to the bottom of the iTunes page and look at what other shows iTunes recommends, because it'll give you about 10 other shows. So for every show that you find on iTunes, it'll recommend you 5 or 10 other shows that are in that same ballpark, and usually some smaller ones too. Those are the best ones to go after if you're just starting out. Like go after the shows that have, you know, 15 reviews, 25 reviews, 50 reviews on iTunes, right? Go after the ones that they're not big time yet. They might be on their way to, but they're not there yet. And they're probably very open. They're looking for guests. They're open to being pitched, you know, new guests to them. They're probably going to be recording in 2 weeks and not 3 months from now. You know, there's a lot of benefits of just going after those smaller shows. Get your feet wet, get comfortable. So that's where I would start. And then the other place you can start, just for some other ideas of where to find podcasts, I mentioned that my podcast got like rated, you know, the top whatever in the industry. Yeah. Just do a quick Google search for the top podcast in real estate or the top podcast in automotive. So if you have a side hustle where you've got like a group for owners of a particular type of car, like Camaros, you know, go search for podcasts that are about the automotive space, or maybe there's some Camaro podcasts, right? Top podcasts for Camaro owners. Right. So if you just look, like, do those simple searches on Google, somebody has probably written an article and done the work for you and put together a top 10 list or something like that, where you can find exactly which shows the people that are in that space are already listening to.
So then you go and then perhaps you listen to a few episodes for potential podcasts that you want to be a guest on, and then you reach out to the host, right? Mm-hmm. And what do you suggest would be the best way to approach a host? How would you sort of, what angle would you take when you pitch yourself to go on a show?
So a couple things. Number one, the best way to approach a podcast host is by having somebody else do it for you, like an assistant. So I've got a training program for that, because I do believe, like, in this world that we run in, It does make you look better, makes you look like a more of a team behind you and stuff like that, if it's not you reaching out. So reaching out yourself is okay for the first handful, and then find somebody who can reach out for you, preferably like a virtual assistant who reports to you and does other things for you. Because it's at the end of the day, the part that's worth your time is showing up and having the conversation. Everything else can be done by somebody that makes 10 to 15 bucks an hour. So that's number one. Number two is you pitch them on that story hook. That's the angle. The story hook is, how did you discover this insight, this expertise that sent you on this journey? That's typically what you'd reach out and say. When you're looking at podcasts to pitch, a great thing to look for is to look back through the guests and the episodes that they've done and see if there's anybody who is kind of in the same ballpark and talked about similar topics, and reach out and say, hey, I noticed you had John Smith on your show. I have a similar topic, but here's my unique twist on it. And I know it's been a while since you had John on the show, so if you want to talk about something like this again, but from a different angle, here's what I think I can bring to the table. Let me know if you're open to the idea. Mm-hmm. And most podcast hosts, if you just send them a quick 2 or 3 paragraph email like that, they could be looking at it on their phone in line at Starbucks, and that's a pretty easy yes. Mm-hmm. Like, that's clearly someone who's done a little bit of homework. You're referencing a guest I've already had, but you're telling me how you're different. And if that topic even remotely grabs me, which most likely it would, if I've already interviewed somebody about it, I'm probably going to say yes. You know, odds are I'm going to tell you yes. And then from there, it's just follow up.
Okay. So at which point do you decide that you want to, like, take it to the next level when it comes to reaching out to podcasts? So first off, you're doing that manually. You're sending messages. And then later on, you find someone, where a virtual assistant, and you pay them to help you pitch. But what is the next level from that?
I would say the next level is launching your own show.
Okay.
And just like what we're doing here, where you record it on Zoom on video. Yeah. And to me, that's the next step, is launching your own show, just like what we're doing here on Zoom, where you record it and then have it produced and turned into an actual podcast. So you mentioned, like, breaking into new industries. I mean, that, yeah, to me, that's one of the most effective things you can do with a podcast, is take somebody that's a total unknown and make them an influencer in about 18 months. That's what a podcast can do for you. I've lived it. I went from not being able to get certain people on the phone to them taking my calls, to them feeling honored to get onto my podcast in the space of like 18 to 24 months. The same people. It was crazy.
So this is, walk me through this actually. This is quite interesting. Was this when you were going on people's podcasts, or this is when you were running your own podcast and you went from, like you said, being an unknown to an influencer in 18 months?
Yeah, that was from the time that I started that podcast in real estate. And I was getting interviewed a little bit on the way, but mostly it was hosting that did that, because the podcast presented me as an expert. Right. So yeah, I was getting interviewed a little bit on the way, but it was mostly like hosting the show. If your show is positioned right and it's strategic and it's going after the right niche audience, yeah, it will instantly make you more credible. And then as the show goes along and it starts to gather steam and it starts to get accolades and it starts to get praise from the people who've been a guest and all those good things happen, it starts to steamroll like a snowball going downhill. It just starts to accumulate. And the next thing you know, you look up and people go, oh, wow. You know, are you going to be at the next event? Are you going to be at the next event? You know, stuff like that starts happening. I remember going to an event, like it was around that time period, like 18 months after we started the show or whatever. And every time I got into an elevator, I got recognized. One guy like gave me a big bear hug. I had like, this is somebody I hadn't talked to in like a year or something like that, but he'd been listening to in the podcast. Just weird things like that happen just by hosting and just by being consistent, because it get like just being consistent. Most people aren't consistent. And so people respect consistency, just relentless week in, week out, a new episode comes out. People respect that. And it creates this sense of momentum and inevitability, right? That you're growing, that people are paying attention to you, that you're credible, you have authority, you have visibility, you have relationships and all these fun things. So yeah, I mean, that's, like I said, I've lived it. You can absolutely, like it's still absolutely possible to do that in 18 months. Even there could be a million, there could be 5 million podcasts on iTunes. That opportunity will not go away, because the riches are always in the niches. It's just a matter of finding where the gap is that you can fill and go out and fill it.
So speaking of niches, is there a time where you might feel like if you started the podcast in a particular niche, mm-hmm. and it sort of branches out or it's moving into a tangential industry or niche, would there be a time where you might decide to branch it out or to shift the focus of the podcast?
Funny you should ask. So yeah. Next year I'm taking the real estate podcast and we're refocusing it around sales and marketing. For a lot of reasons. I'm not as passionate about speaking to a real estate crowd anymore, like I was 5 years ago, and my business doesn't revolve around it. And my partner, my co-host, you know, we tinkered around with a lot of coaching and things like that. He hasn't really found that thing that he likes. What he's passionate about is sales and marketing. And that's what I'm passionate about. So absolutely. So what we're doing is that the name of our show is Real Estate Uncensored. We're just going to swap out the real estate and put in sales and marketing, call it Sales and Marketing Uncensored. All the rest of the branding stays the same. We submit a quick name change to iTunes. We're off and running. Same email list, same social media audience, same everything. But then that does open us up, right? So that sets us up for maybe another round of growth, because now we can speak to a different audience. And in that particular case, we're actually going to retain the audience that we have, because we're already talking about sales and marketing and that we always have. We're just going to leave a certain segment of the content behind, and we're not going to talk about some of the functional things about real estate. And we're just going to keep the part where we focus on sales and marketing. But that means that now we're open up to a whole bigger audience that doesn't care about real estate, but would love to hear what we have to say about sales and marketing. So you can absolutely, and I think this is the way it should be done. I think you should absolutely start by shrinking the battlefield, focus on a very small area where you can dominate, get a foothold, build a home base there first, and then you expand from there. And if you, one of the things that I work with my clients on is just how do you brand a podcast in such a way that it gives you that freedom, because of the couple little, like if you structure it right with a couple tweaks, yeah, 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, you can just do a slight little rebrand or a slight little tweak and move into a bigger niche.
Yeah, that's something that that's crossed my mind a few times over the last
How year. So?
Yeah. So this is like a...
You mentioned tangential. What do you mean by it? Like, do you feel like your podcast is kind of like you developed a foothold in with an audience you didn't expect to?
Well, let's say like, for example, there's a number of people listening to this that are either nomads or business owners, small business, like
small business owners, entrepreneurs. And the name of the podcast is Live Your Edge, right? So I feel like on some level, there's also other people that can benefit from this that are not just in those demographics that can definitely get value out of the guests that we have on the show. So would it make sense sometimes to, like you said, change the name or the branding so that I'm covering more ground? And you just sort of answered it where, yeah, you can change it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when do you know to change that, to make that change? Or is there, you don't never know, and then you just decide like, okay, I'm going to change it. And...
Well, it would be a cop-out to say you just never know. What I think is that the dirty secret about podcasting is that successful podcasting, especially hosting your own show, the success of the show is very much tied to the strategy of the business behind the podcast. That's okay. What I've noticed about. So the most successful podcasting clients we have, they're not just successful because they're more charismatic or fun, or they have better personalities than others. The success of their podcast was intimately tied to the fact that their business strategy was right, and they were aiming their business at the right niche of people, and they used the podcast to get that message to the right people. So I think your business strategy should drive when you make changes to your podcast, not the other way around, right? This is why I'm not a big fan of growth hacking, chasing chart positions in iTunes and all that stuff, because you could pick up another maybe pick up another 5,000 downloads per episode or something like that. If it's the wrong people and they don't buy from you, what good is it?
Yeah.
And people spend a lot of time twisting themselves into pretzels trying to, or they think about launching a podcast and they think if they don't get 5 or 10,000 downloads per episode, that something's wrong with them. And nothing is wrong with you. Like I'll tell you, one of my clients runs a podcast that does very, very well. Like it dominates a particular smaller niche within the real estate space. And he built a multi six-figure coaching consulting business in, I think, 2 years off the back of that podcast. And since then, he's tried all kinds of other marketing strategies. Nothing has beat the podcast. Nothing can beat the podcast. The podcast keeps trucking along, keeps creating demand, keeps getting coaching clients to sign up, for $1,000 a month, keeps people signing up for $3,000 workshops where they have to fly to Omaha, Nebraska, of all places. Oh. Right? We're not talking about Miami.
Yeah.
They fly into Omaha, Nebraska because they listen to the podcast. So the podcast keeps chugging along. What's funny about the podcast is it doesn't get, I don't think in any single episode has got more than a few thousand downloads.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
He's getting a lot of business just working that niche, just working that audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you focus on the right people, it makes it a lot easier because then you can say something that is clear and compelling. Because you're not trying to please everybody. Like I was sitting in a workshop here about a month ago. I was in Vegas and one of my friends in the business invited me to one of her branding workshops. And I was kind of paying attention to the other people because everybody was kind of really working on their positioning and their marketing messaging and stuff like that. The people that I noticed had the most trouble coming up with the right words to say were the people that were also not clear about who their ideal people were. And they were trying to appeal to 3 or 4 different types of people. And they're trying to find this magic set of words that appeal to all of them. The answer isn't in the magic words. The answer is then giving up 1 or 2 of those groups of people so you can tightly focus. And as soon as they focused, they were able to find something that was really clear and compelling to them. So it's all about finding the right people. And if you try to please everybody, you'll end up with a message that's just watered down and just doesn't really attract much attention. So the further you drill down, the easier it gets to come up with the right message that's clear and compelling.
I think this is something that business owners struggle with, even when it comes to selling their own products. They try to appeal to multiple audiences, mm-hmm. and they're afraid maybe they would lose audiences because they decide to focus on one of them. Mm-hmm. How would you sort of combat that sort of anxiety, or you don't try to combat it? You just go and do it and allow that to just to test it one audience at a time.
Well, I think you can combat the anxiety of it. There was a couple of books that I read, and the point of the books, among many other great points in those books, but one of the things that I took away from it is that the companies that offer the widest range of products and services are almost always the least profitable.
Hmm.
They might be big, that doesn't make them profitable. So GM here in the States is a great example. You've also got your really big, like, multinational companies that are based in Asia that are also great examples that make everything from, you know, like Honda, for example. Honda in Japan means motorcycle. Honda in the States means a Honda Civic. Same company, wildly different products, but they're not anywhere near as profitable as one focused car company that does nothing but sell that car, right? So Honda motorcycles aren't as profitable as Harley Davidson. Why? Because Harley Davidson doesn't try to make Honda Civics. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
If you can imagine that, like, nobody's buying a Harley Davidson car. That's just not going to happen.
No, that's not.
Thank God they're not trying. Because if they tried, everybody would. Now, here's what's funny about it. If Harley Davidson came out with their own car, it would make news. Millions of dollars of PR. Who's going to buy it?
No one's going to buy it.
No one's going to buy it. Right. So they would waste all this money. We do this constantly with ourselves. You know, we come out with this new service, we come out with this new product, we launch this new side hustle, whatever, because we want to try to appeal to everyone. And we forget that strategy doesn't work for the biggest companies. So why are we chasing them? They wish they could be more focused.
We shouldn't be trying to copy them and not being focused and diversifying. I mean, maybe it makes sense for them to diversify, because they don't know what, or maybe they do know what sells the best and they still decide not to do it. In the case, like,
well, that's the thing, is when you're a publicly traded company, you can't chase profit, you chase growth. Yeah. And Amazon's the perfect example. Like that's the new reality we live in, is if like all the companies that you see, like I can't count how many times I've had people come up to me and approach me with an idea for the Netflix of something. Oh, we're going to build the Netflix of real estate. We're going to build the Netflix of this and that. And I'm like, you realize Netflix isn't profitable. Like, Netflix is $10 billion in debt or something like that. And so we have to be careful who our heroes are, because there's plenty of big companies doing lots of really dumb things, and they cover it up by raising the next round of capital.
Yeah. That sort of justifies it for them to move into new markets.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For most of the people listening, the challenge is to focus. It's to give up trying to appeal to everybody. It's give up trying to be everywhere on social media. The challenge for us is focus. It's finding the right people for us, being in one place where they can connect with us, and really focusing on building up one great place where we can communicate with the right people. And then let the other stuff, let the other stuff go, and know that people that aren't a good fit are still going to come to you. Like, you're still going to get the spillover. And I'm sure you've had this happen to you, where you're like, hey, I know you typically do this, but I was hoping you'd make an exception for me. And that puts you in a completely different position than you trying to create a service or a product for everyone. Because now you can say, well, I don't normally, but we can have a conversation about it. You know what I'm saying? Then you can go, well, it's a little out of my specialty, so I'm going to charge you double.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? You can raise your prices, or you can do all kinds of stuff, or you can just do it as a fun project. But it does put you in a completely different position. And if you're like an independent business owner or an entrepreneur, that's a hugely powerful position to be in, to have somebody come to you and say, hey, I know this isn't what you normally do, but I was hoping you'd make an exception. Because then you have all the negotiating power.
So you rather the new markets or the new business or new demographics to come from an exception that is made because people have shown interest in something, they trust you, and then they want to work on something with you, as opposed to you trying to force yourself into a new market and not have any of that sort of conversations with potential clients.
Seth Godin has a great quote about that. Don't start a business until someone's asking you to. I think that goes well for new products and services. If somebody's not asking for it, probably something's wrong, which they don't want it. If you're a visionary like Steve Jobs, you might be able to create something that people don't know that they want and give it to them. But how many of us are Steve Jobs?
And actually, I've heard somewhere that majority of business, unless you're like in high tech or some crazy stuff, you're not trying to reinvent the wheel by having this most innovative product. It's just something that people need and something that people have a pain for, and they decide to find a solution for it.
Yeah, especially because you mentioned like the digital nomads in the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if you're a digital nomad and somebody asks what you do and you find yourself starting with the word, well, like that's...
I have those moments.
I know, I do too. We all do, it's fine. But yeah, the goal is to get out of that moment as quickly as possible and deliver 1 to 2 sentences that are super crystal clear that they go, oh, now I get it.
Yeah. Usually it takes a while.
It does take a while. It's a process, and there's nothing wrong with that. And it doesn't, you know, if you're not there yet, don't feel bad. Just know that that should be the goal. The goal should be when somebody asks you what you do, you deliver 1 to 2 sentences. We launch podcasts for emerging thought leaders. Great. For the right person, that when that person hears that, they're going to go, oh, we need to have a conversation. That sounds like me. And I've been thinking about launching a podcast like that. That happened to me all the time. And I realized that it was because I had the right clear and compelling idea for the people I was talking to. When I wasn't talking to the right person, that was like water off a duck's back, went right over their head. They didn't care. If I was talking to the right person and they were thinking about podcasting, their automatic response was, oh my God, seriously? Okay, we need to have a conversation. And that's where all of my initial sales come from. And that's where the sales continue to come from, because it's still the right idea for the right people, right? If I tried to offer 2 or 3 or 4 different things, I'd never be able to make that statement. And the response that I would get would be, oh, that's interesting. I get lots of encouragements, lots of pats on the back, and no sales. And mm-hmm. I think that happens to a lot of us, whether we're doing our own thing, whether we're going for a big career move, whatever. Like the more unfocused we are, the harder it is for us to explain to people what we do and why we do it. We don't see the effects because we continue to get encouragement from people because people are nice. Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of us fall into that trap and we don't realize even what we're doing that's causing that.
You'd rather the new markets or the new like the new business or new demographics to come from an exception that is made because people have shown interest in something. They trust you and then they want to work on something with you, as opposed to you trying to force yourself into a new market and not have any of that sort of conversations with, you know, potential clients.
We all can. There is a constant internal and external pressure to expand. There's very little pressure to focus. The pressure to focus has to be something you create inside of yourself, because everybody around you wants to expand. If all you do is listen to Gary Vee and Grant Cardone, you're going to be sold on expanding all the time. Do more, do more, do more. Do another thing. Add another social media app to your toolkit. The internal and external pressure is always there to expand. There's very little pressure from anyone, even inside of yourself, to focus and do less. So you have to create that. You have to like keep reading about it. Keep, you know, looking at examples of people who are good at it. I literally this morning I sat in Starbucks and rereading one of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger's books, just to refresh myself on how important it is to stay focused and stay simple.
Stay focused. Yeah, I think like a lot of us, especially some listening, do follow like Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, and the idea of trying a whole bunch of different social channels, putting content on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram, on LinkedIn, and of course, there's a content strategy behind that that allows people to do that. But at the same time, like I also have this issue where if I'm posting, I have to constantly keep track of all these different channels and engagement and comments and all of these things. And you have that sense of FOMO when you hear people like Gary Vee talk about it. And you look at yourself in the, like you look at your computer and you're like, oh man, should I post something on Should I post something on Facebook today? Should I post something on Instagram? You know, like, it's been a while since I put something on LinkedIn. Let me update that a little bit. So your suggestion is just pick one and go right into it. And for you, it's podcasting, right? Just go into it.
Yeah. Well, but even that principle applies to social media. So podcasting is my platform for leadership, but podcasting is, it's not a social media channel. So when I talk about like having one place, we're starting a Facebook group around my podcast and around the upcoming book. And that's going to be my one place, because Facebook right now on my personal profile is my one place. And Facebook is going to start clamping down on that. I can already see that coming. So we're having to shift where our one place is. Yeah. Yep.
Wait, they're clamping down the groups, or they're clamping down on the...
No, they're clamping down on the personal profiles. People that use their personal profiles for business purposes exclusively, they're starting to clamp down on the organic reach.
Oh.
Yeah. So just when you think you've got your one place, you might have to build something else. But point being, like, Facebook is still my ecosystem. For the people that I want to reach that are in their 30s and 40s that have built successful 6- and 7-figure companies and now want to turn around and teach, train, and lead people, like, they're on Facebook. They're also on LinkedIn occasionally. They're also on Instagram because they're probably trying to figure it out like the rest of us are. You know what I'm saying? They're not there really following people. They're there trying to figure out how to market their business. Same thing for TikTok. Like, the people that are on TikTok with Gary Vee are the people who are following Gary Vee trying to figure out how to use TikTok for business. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you want to sell stuff to them, that's fine. But Gary is selling stuff to us on how to be successful on TikTok. That is not your market, probably.
Yeah.
So my market is Facebook. As one person put it, Facebook is the new Facebook. It's fine. You know, it's not going anywhere anytime soon. So yeah.
Nothing against Gary, but I feel like he, in the way he's talking about, don't get to, he's sometimes, I feel like he has these two contradicting narratives. One is like, should stay focused, you know, on one thing, or not worry about what other people are thinking about you or any of that. And then on the other hand, he's telling you to go and experiment with whole bunch of different channels. You got to do TikTok. You got to do all of these things.
And guess what people take away the most?
So which one is it?
So people take away.
People take away the expanding. Most is expanding, yes. Because the FOMO. So I think it's like he's selling FOMO, and at the same time, he's selling the anti version of that, which I feel like it's
isn't it? I know. I could spend. I need to do a whole episode deconstructing Gary Vee because it is hilarious, isn't it? And it's, you know, look, when you're a leader, your message is going to get interpreted how people want to take it. So I don't know what his motives are. I think he genuinely enjoys being social on social media, and that's cool for him. He also genuinely enjoys working 15 hours a day. I do not. I want to work 5 hours a day. I want to run my agency in 6 hours a week. You know, like, I want to host my podcast and have conversations with fun people. You know, so like, our goals are different. Our working habits are different. So you got to be, again, you just be careful who your heroes are and ask yourself, look, is the person I am following living the lifestyle that I want? Because both Grant Cardone and Gary Vee don't live the lifestyle I want. Yeah.
Yeah. That's very sound. That's very sound. Yeah. And we're just about wrapping up this episode for today. And do you have any, actually, a question I'd like to ask, which I ask pretty much all my guests these days, is one is, what is the wisest piece of advice someone has ever given you when it comes to operating your business?
I would say it is the example that was set by the CEO of the agency I used to work for, which is, and he lived it more than said it, but I say it all the time now to myself and to other people, which is sell one thing to one type of person.
I'm just going to let that sink in there, because I think we all need to hear it again and again. And so if people want to, you know, follow you, I know you have a book coming out. Tell us more about that. Like, how can we find out more about you, your book, your podcast, and if people want to work with
you? Yeah. So everything is under the brand Microfamous. So that's what the book will be called. They're the Microfamous podcast you can get right now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And I think for the best next step for people, if you want to get out there and start getting featured on podcasts and being that guest expert, just go to howtogetfeatured.com. Because I did a training with one of my clients where we dive deep into those three different types of story hooks. I mentioned the one, the discovery story. There's two other different types of stories that you can use to get yourself featured on podcasts. So if you want to know what those three types of story hooks are and how to start reaching out and get booked on podcasts to build your brand and start reaching ideal clients, just go to howtogetfeatured.com. That gets you into the email list and we'll keep you up to date on the book and all that fun stuff.
Awesome. And are you on channels like, are you active on, say, Instagram?
Not so much. It's mostly Facebook. If you go to getmicrofamous.com, it's got my social media links. So Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, like you can connect with me wherever. But yeah, definitely more active on Facebook.
Get Microfamous. I'm typing it in right now. It's an interesting URL.
Yeah, and it's just that just goes to like a, it's an Everlinks, almost like a link tree. So it's just basically the real basic stuff. You can get the podcast there. You can get connected up on social, but that's all that is.
Great stuff. So great speaking. Great having you on the show, Matt.
Yeah, I appreciate it. This is a lot of fun.
Yep. Thank you all for tuning in to the Live Your Edge podcast, and we'll see you all on the next episode.